الحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله وعلى آله وصحبه أجمعين. السلام عليكم everybody. Hope everyone's Thanksgiving break went okay. That everyone enjoy their break. Mm-hmm. Y'all feel rejuvenated? I know sometimes like, no? I see a lot of people saying enjoy their break, but they don't feel rejuvenated. There's like a point where like, sometimes like a break is not really a break. You actually feel more tired after it's over. You guys ever feel that before?
Yeah. I think his finals week is like this week, so
yeah,
break just to set us up.
Yeah. No, I feel that. There's also I also think that between Thanksgiving and winter break is a very weird time. It's like a time of like 2.5 to 3 weeks where it's just like you're in limbo a little bit. You're like ready for like the long break, but then you also know you have finals coming up, which is also strange for people. So, alhamdulillah, that's good. Everyone get together with their family over this break. Does anyone do like a traditional like Thanksgiving meal with your family? No? Okay, hold on. Sorry. but anyone do a non-American dinner on Thanksgiving? You guys do like Desi food or like Arab food ever or like African food? Anyone? Yeah. Apparently, like a lot of Muslims hate turkey. I didn't realize this. A lot of Muslims don't like the taste of turkey.
They don't know how to cook turkey.
That's true.
I think it's just really hard to get it right.
Yeah, that is a big possibility that they don't know how to make it. But they always say they're like, oh, it tastes gamey and like,
yeah,
you know, like,
good,
huh?
Gamey is good.
There we go. Yeah. Yeah,
I think they just don't like when it's dry. I feel like everyone just likes chicken just because it's juicy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but turkey is juicy too. If you smoke it, it's on points.
Yeah. Those are.
You just need to have a
low key. Yeah. Alhamdulillah, though. That's good. So we're starting off again this month. We actually have a short month here at Roots anyway. Everyone kind of usually knows that towards the end of the month of December, we take a little bit of a hiatus from the Roots programming due to just winter break and people traveling and obviously Umrah happening in the wintertime and stuff like that. So we have soul food for the next couple of weeks, and then inshallah we'll be taking a break once y'all officially go on break from school and stuff like that. So we'll enjoy obviously the sessions until we are through with this year's programming. So we are now on hadith number 10 up on your screen. Everyone should be able to see it. Can everyone see it? It's a little too weird, a little far away. Samir, can you just kind of tilt this a little bit to like the side so the girls can see as well? So this hadith that we are on today, it's really interesting because it is actually a hadith about one of the definitions of a Muslim, right? So whenever the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, you know, or in the Quran, you read in a verse in the Quran, like the word mu'min, right, the word believer, what usually comes after it is a part of what makes a believer who they are, right? And this hadith is no different. This hadith, when you read it and you see the word mu'min in it, or of the word believer in it, you know that what is to follow is going to be a very important description of what makes a believer who they are. And so this specific hadith, I'll read it out to you guys. I'm going to kind of get y'all's take on it as well, inshallah, as we go forward, okay? So this hadith, it says, عِدَةُ الْمُؤْمِنِ كَأَخْدِ الْكَفِّ, okay? عِدَةُ الْمُؤْمِنِ كَأَخْدِ الْكَفِّ, okay? So the translation is, the word of the believer is like the seizing of the hand, or the seizing of the wrist, okay? Al-kafi, or al-kaf, doesn't just mean hand, because hand in Arabic means, it's the word yad, okay? So the word kaf in Arabic is more so the wrist, okay? So what does that mean to y'all when I read it? The word of a believer is like the seizing of the wrist. What does that mean? This is a little bit of like a unwrapping situation. What do you guys feel about it when you read this? Anyone have any initial thoughts when you read it? Anyone have any ideas, any thoughts in your mind? Go ahead, free space. Go for it. Anyone?
Yes? Holding something close, like keeping something tight.
Okay. Holding something close or keeping something tight, okay? Like the seizing of a hand, right? Just grabbing a person's wrist or a hand. You have to hold onto it tightly, okay? Very good. Anyone else? The word of a Muslim, what does that mean? Anyone have an idea? The word of a Muslim, what does that mean?
Is it like, when they say like, word as in like promise, is that what it's talking about?
Good. So عِدَةٌ means like a promise or an oath, right? When you commit to something. When you commit to something, That is the word of a Muslim, right? And this hadith alludes to this idea that a promise to a Muslim shouldn't just be like a casual commitment. You know what I'm saying? Like, it shouldn't just be like, oh, yeah, I'll be there on Friday night. And if I'm not there, then sorry, I guess I'm just not there. It's not that simple for a Muslim. It's different, right? And this is something that, you know, contemporary social life kind of takes like a little bit of like a comedic take on, where like people like overcommit and under deliver and stuff like that. But in the realm of Islam, it's actually a pretty serious concept, right? Because this word iddatun means promise or oath or word. That it's not just this casual statement. When you tell somebody you're gonna do something, it's not just like this casual laid back thing. It's actually something very serious. And one of the things that we talk about in Islam very seriously, and this is actually, Allah mentions this in the Quran. He actually says, and I'll read this verse out to you guys, يَا أَيُّهَا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا لِمَا تَقُولُونَ مَا لَا تَفْعَلُونَ. Why do you say that which you do not do? He says that to people in the Quran, Allah Ta'ala, he does. يَا أَيُّهَا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا. He says it to the believers. And this is where it gets interesting, because Allah's not addressing everybody. He doesn't say, يَا أَيُّهَا النَّاسِ. He says, يَا أَيُّهَا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا. O you who believe, why do you say things that you do not do, right? And so for a believer, the standard of excellence is always going to be higher than the average person. And I want everyone to kind of internalize that a little bit, that you are not just like everybody else that walks around in the city of Dallas, right? You're not just like everybody else that walks around in the country of the USA. You're not just like everybody else that walks around in the world even. You have this honor, this izzah, this dignity of being a Muslim, right? And to be quite honest with you, sometimes privilege and honor get a little bit lost in translation when you have it, right? A person who, mashallah, has wealth, sometimes they don't realize how wealthy they are, right? When a person has certain privileges in their life, they have no idea how good they have it in their life versus other people. And the same way actually goes with Muslim people. How many of you, have you guys ever had a moment of like realizing that like you're happy to be a Muslim? Anyone have ever have that in their life before? It's usually a time where like something bad happens, or like you see something that kind of like just takes you aback a little bit, and you realize you're like, oh man, I'm Muslim, thank God, right? But with that gratitude comes a lot of responsibility, right? Like, we can't just reap the blessings of being a Muslim and not realize that there are some kind of responsibilities that come along with it, right? Like, I can't just call myself a Muslim and just be like, yeah, I don't have to pray. I can't just call myself a Muslim and say, I don't have to do X, Y, and Z. If I'm going to reap the rewards of being a Muslim, I have to make sure that I put in the work to be a Muslim as well. And one of the things that the Prophet ﷺ, he teaches us specifically in this hadith, is that you got to walk the walk. You know, it's not just about prayer. It's not just about fasting. It's not just about zakat or sadaqah or hajj or umrah. It's about small things as well. Because when you look at it, like promises, oaths, right? Your word, it doesn't intrinsically look like it's a religious thing right away. You're like, oh, like everyone makes promises, right? Just like everyone else eats food. Just like everyone else goes to work. But the beauty of Islam is that every single one of these details in life has spiritual connotations to them, right? And so promises are the same way. And Allah challenges you as a believer. If you are a believer and you call yourself a believer and you reap the rewards of being a believer, then you got to make sure that what you say is what you do. So that verse in the Quran, right? لِمَا تَقُولُونَ مَا لَا تَفْعَلُونَ. Why do you say that which you do not do? Is one of the biggest challenges that Allah throws out to humanity, right? Like, you say that you believe in God, but when I look at the security camera, it's not adding up to me. You know what I'm saying? Like, you say that you're a Muslim, you say that you believe in Allah, but you don't do X, Y, and Z. And this is found in other hadith of the Prophet ﷺ, by the way. The Prophet ﷺ, he says, وَمَنْ كَانَ يُؤْمِنُ بِاللَّهِ وَالْيَوْمِ الْآخِرِ, he says, فَلْيُقْرِمْ ضَيْفَهُ. If you're a person who believes in God and the hereafter, then you should honor your guests. You know, وَمَنْ كَانَ يُؤْمِنُ بِاللَّهِ وَالْيَوْمِ الْآخِرِ فَلْيُقْرِمْ جَارَهُ. You should honor your neighbor. وَمَنْ كَانَ يُؤْمِنُ بِاللَّهِ وَالْيَوْمِ الْآخِرِ فَلْيَكُلْ خَيْرًا أَوْ لِيَصْمُتْ. Then speak good or just be quiet. So these are smaller requirements of being a believer. That if you're a believer, you gotta sometimes pay attention to these finer details in life. It's not just about the big picture. It's sometimes those little things that make up that big picture. Y'all understand what I'm saying so far? Now, one of the things about oaths, and this is just kind of like a really interesting point here is that one of the biggest difficulties or challenges of promises or oaths or trusts or whatever they may be is that it's always harder to keep them when you don't want to keep them anymore, when it's inconvenient for you to keep it, right? Can someone give me an example of this? Somebody give me an example of this. When is it hard to keep a promise? Anyone want to share something? When is it hard to keep a promise? There are moments where it's easy to keep a promise, right? It's okay. When's it hard to keep a promise? Can someone share something with me?
I guess when someone does like a bad deed, like a really bad one. Like we saw something to someone bad, but then they're like, oh, can you keep a promise? Well, like it's pretty hard not to because it's, let's just say it's like a crime or something.
Okay, okay. So when something, somebody does something bad and you don't want to like expose them, I guess, or something like that, like it's hard to kind of keep your promise to kind of protect their dignity. Okay, sure. Yes?
Or like when you, like say you're going through something and then you're just like, God, if you just like make this right, like I'll never do it again. And then, like, things go right, and then, like, do it again.
Yeah, I feel you. I feel you. Okay, gotcha. So it's like a, almost like a one-time pass, yeah. Right? You're like, oh, just give me this one time. I'll do it. I'll never do it again.
You're like, God, just this time.
Just this one time, right? I'm weak. I'm a human being. You know me, right? It's your girl. Okay. Very good. All right. Very, very good. Aliza, you had something?
When there's some type of benefit in it for you.
Ooh. What do you mean by that exactly?
Like, for example, like you were receiving something from somebody, uh-huh. But it's not really something that you can accept,
okay.
Like, Islamically.
Okay.
But like, it's still like in your human nature, yeah. Like just in general, like you shouldn't accept it or like it's going to lead you to do something worse, but it's okay. Technically a benefit.
Okay. I got you. Okay, cool. So like, so it's almost like a tempting situation, right? Very good. Now, one of the, and this is really cool because I all of you guys kind of touched upon something that I wanted to share with you all. There was actually this moment in the Sirah, the biography of the Prophet ﷺ, where he was also kind of like, I would say like swindled into making a commitment that seemed very unfair. And a lot of you may have read about this already in your life at some point. It was a chapter in the Prophet's life called Hudaybiyah, where like he wanted to go and do Umrah, but he was refused, right? He was basically kind of turned away because the Meccans didn't want him to do Umrah that year. They almost wanted to kind of play like psychological mind games with him that like, oh, you traveled all the way from Medina. Oh, I guess that kind of sucks. Where you got to turn around now. And one of the things that was difficult about that was that, you know, when you set out to do something in your life and you get rejected, it's very interesting to see how a human being reacts to that rejection, right? Y'all ever find out things about yourself when rejection happens to you? Like, how do you handle it? How do you react to it? Because, dude, life is great when everything goes your way, right? Like, whenever you get those great, you know, test exam results back that you want, everything's happy and, you know, everything's cool. You know, when your friends are cool with you and everyone's, like, you know, like, holding hands and swinging and dancing, like, it's great. But what happens when that argument takes place? What happens when you get that, you know, bad grade back? What happens when you don't get your application looked at by the boss? What happens when you get rejected from a certain school or a certain career path that you wanted? How do you react to that? The Prophet ﷺ, he went all the way to Mecca and he realized literally as he was on the doorstep of the city of Mecca that these people came out and they were like, yeah, this ain't happening this year. You know, I don't care that you basically chose to sacrifice half of your month this month traveling. I don't care that you put all of your wealth into traveling. I don't care that you took all of your community and brought them here. I don't care. And they themselves literally brought, they kind of formulated this contract called Hudaybiyah. It happened right at this area called Hudaybiyah. And they basically made the Prophet ﷺ sign on this pact, this oath. And I don't know, have you guys ever kind of read the oath of Hudaybiyah? Anyone? Have you guys ever seen like the clauses of it? So there are basically three very interesting clauses, okay? Number one, they said that you're not allowed to enter Mecca this year. That's the first thing, okay? You're not allowed to come this year. I know you're right here, but you're not allowed to be here. It's like crazy. It's like a psychological like torture because they're like, no, just let me do this. I'm literally right here. It's like going on a vacation and you land and like the airport security tells you, you got to turn back around. That's why it happens to people when they go to Umrah sometimes, by the way. It's like just torture, right? You literally land there and you're in Saudi and they're like, yeah, no, can't come this year. It just happened. Do you think this has only happened to the Prophet? It happened literally this year, actually. And they say, you're not coming this year. You got to get back. You got to get out. But you can come next year. You can come next year. This time next year. That's the first thing. The second thing they said was, hey, if anybody from Medina comes to Mecca Like, meaning, like, if a Muslim comes from Medina to Mecca, we get to keep them. We're not going to send them back to you. We got to keep them. Because one of their biggest fears is basically Muslims are growing to this, like, great number. So they're like, you know, if a Medinan comes to Mecca, then we get to keep them in Mecca. We don't have to return them to you. But here's a third clause. If a person goes from Mecca to Medina, you have to return them back. You have to give them back. Now, in your mind right now, just like think to yourself, does this in any way whatsoever sound fair to you at all? Like, absolutely not. It's like, it's probably the most unjust thing you can think of, right? Like, a kid could look at this contract, read it like a lawyer, and be like, yeah, this is weird. Like, your five-year-old nephew could do that. It's just, it's super one-sided, right? But the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, he said, you know what? Check this. Allah is testing us right now. At least he's giving us the opportunity to come back next year. Although this doesn't seem fair, there's a reason why this is happening. Okay. Now, after this was over, this is really, really interesting. There was a person by the name of Abu Jandal, and he basically was so taken aback by the character of the Prophet ﷺ and how he handled that situation, that high stress situation, that he was like, dude, he was on the other side, but he was like, yo, I want to be Muslim now. He's like, I see the way that he handled rejection. If this is anything that Islam has to kind of like give me, or if this is anything that Islam kind of embodies, I want part of it. I want to be a part of it. So he, after this is over, he goes to Medina. He goes to Medina, he's like, Ya Rasulullah, I've come here, I'm ready to accept Islam, I'm so excited to be joining your community. But what was part of the contract? What was part of the contract? Dude, it sucks. If a Meccan comes to Medina, by contract, you got to return them. By contract, you agreed to this. You gave your word on it. In fact, Ali ibn Abi Talib, the Prophet's cousin, he signed for the Prophet. He signed, he said, yep, this contract is verified and authenticated by the consent of the Prophet. And so when the Prophet saw Abu Jandal, don't you think it broke his heart? That like he had to tell him, like, no, like, you got to go back? It broke him. It broke his heart. But he told Abu Jandal, he goes, yo, I'm sorry. I'm very, very sorry. And I would love to have you here as much as I would love to have you here. I would love to have you here in like a year. Because we just signed a contract that says, if you come here from Mecca, I gotta send you back over there. And even if it's a contract that I don't like, even if it's something that is inconvenient for me, I have to honor that contract. And you know what's really incredible? You'll find out later, inshallah, when you study kind of stuff like that, you'll realize that the Hudaybiyah contract was eventually broken by the Meccans, not by the Prophet. That's how much he honored like oaths and promises. He's like, this is low-key, like serious stuff. It's not like a joke. Even when it's inconvenient for you to break a promise or to break a trust, it is incumbent upon you as a Muslim to keep it, no matter how inconvenient it becomes for you in your life at that moment, right? And so one of the things, and I wanted to kind of share this with you guys, and I'm actually going to pause this hadith and kind of go to this kind of second hadith that I wanted to kind of share with y'all really quickly, inshallah, because I think it's really, really, really deep. And I want to kind of read this with you guys, because this also is a hadith that kind of talks about the opposite of what it means to break a promise, okay? And this, we can kind of like kind of infer this as a Muslim, that whenever Allah or the Prophet give us a lesson, or they teach us something, we can assume that the opposite is probably also something that is important as well. So for example, if Allah Ta'ala says in the Quran that profanity and vulgarity is something that you shouldn't do, then we can safely assume that like saying good words is something that we should do, right? So if the Prophet says that you should love for your brother what you love for yourself, that we should also assume that what you dislike for yourself, you should also dislike for your brother or sister. Y'all understand what I'm saying here? So the opposite of keeping your promise or keeping a trust is breaking it. And the Prophet, he says that there is a lot of dangerous stuff when it comes to breaking your promise. So I'm going to have someone read this out for me in English real quick, inshallah. Who's confident in their English reading? Not Arabic. Don't worry about the Arabic. Anyone? Any girl want to read? I feel like girls are always better at reading than guys are. This is generally the truth. Sophia, go for it. Go do the English part, inshallah.
The Prophet ﷺ said, there are four traits. Whoever has them is a hypocrite, and whoever has one of them, then has one of the traits of hypocrisy until he gives it up. When he speaks, he lies. When he makes a promise, he breaks it. When he makes a covenant, he betrays it. And when he argues, he resorts to foul language.
Mm. Really, really interesting. This is deep. What I want you guys to do really quickly is this. Y'all see the four traits at the bottom? So the four traits right here. I'm going to like kind of highlight it for you guys. These are the four traits right here. All right. So he says إذا حدث كذب وإذا وعد أخلف وإذا عاهد غادر وإذا خاصم فجر. Okay. What do you guys see similarities in these four traits? Why do they lead to, why are they similar? They're not completely broken apart. What similarities do you guys see in these four traits? How are they together in a way, in a weird way? Can someone like give me something? When he makes a covenant, he betrays it. When he argues, or sorry, I'll highlight more. Yeah, when he makes a promise, or when he speaks, he lies. When he makes a promise, he breaks it. When he makes a covenant, he betrays it. And when he argues, he resorts to foul language. How are these four, how are some of these kind of tied together? Anyone have an idea? Yeah, Smell, go ahead.
They're all talking? They're all, like, giving a promise or...
Okay.
They're all talking, but foul language is talking.
Okay, good. Good. Okay, anyone else? Anyone else see similarities in some of these four? I can see some.
Like, if it's not one thing, it leads to something else, because when you're lying, then no one
can trust you. Oh. So you're breaking a promise, no one can trust you. Interesting. So Miliyun says, when a person lies... when they lie, then they're more prone to breaking a promise because they're known to lie, right? Very interesting. Okay, very good. Anyone else? How these four connect to each other in an interesting way? Anyone else see a similarity? When he argues, he resorts to foul language. Anyone?
It's like if they don't go that person's way, then he tries to make it like... kind of just gets mad and just...
Do you hear what Samir just said? Say it again.
I forgot what I said.
Oh, Lord. Okay, do you want me to repeat it?
Yes.
So he said that when something doesn't go your way, you sometimes resort to, like, vulgarity and foul language. Like, when things don't go your way, you start to kind of, like, fumble and, like, get, like, really flustered, and you start to kind of, like, break character, and you start getting a little bit, like, less than savory in terms of your mannerisms, all right? Very good. You know what I see in this? It's really interesting. That in an interesting way, these all, like I think Miliyun said this, they lead to one another. Very interesting, right? وَإِذَا حَدَّثَ كَذَبَ When they speak, they lie, right? One of the traits of hypocrisy is when they speak, they lie, okay? And the second trait of hypocrisy, the Prophet ﷺ, he says, وَإِذَا wa'ada akhlafa, when he or she makes a promise, they end up breaking it. So it's a trait of hypocrisy, the Prophet ﷺ says, that you're hypocritical if you promise somebody something and you later on break it, okay? And then he says, when they are entrusted with something, when they make a covenant, right? Or when they make when they agree to something, wa'idha ahada ghadara, when they make a covenant, they betray it. And the difference between the second and the third one is that, like, the promise is more of like an active thing. Like, when they actively promise something, that they break it. And then when the Prophet ﷺ, he says, وَإِذَا عَهَدَ غَدَرَ, is more of like a receiving one. Like, when you basically are kind of like a stander buyer, kind of like you're kind of like, you know, you didn't necessarily actively make a promise. You were just entrusted with something in your life, right? Like, you've been entrusted with certain things in your life, and you just didn't show up for it, right? That's kind of like more of the third one. And then the fourth one, obviously, we all know what it means. وَإِذَا خَاصَمَ فَجَرَ That when they argue, when they talk to people, they just basically break all rules and protocols, and they basically start using vulgarity and profanity and all these different things. What I see in this is that usually, when a person is comfortable doing one of these things, they're okay with doing all four of them. You understand what I'm saying here? That when a person is okay, there is almost like this pattern of breaking promises, they're more likely than not going to be okay not fulfilling the rights that people have on them. You understand that? When a person is okay using vulgarity and using profanity, they're okay with lying at certain times in their life as well. And the Prophet ﷺ was very profound when he said these things. He didn't ever say things purposelessly. He always said things purposefully, right? So this has incredible meaning behind it, right? And the reason why I brought this up is because I wanted to kind of like share with you guys the seriousness of the Prophet like talking to us about keeping our oaths and promises. That if you do not, you fall into this realm of hypocrisy. Now, it doesn't mean that you're just like a straight up hypocrite. You're like nifaq, you're a munafiq when you do these things. But it means that you are carrying the traits of hypocrisy, right? And if a person really doesn't want to be associated with something, they don't even want to have any sort of small branch of it either, right? Like I'm not a liar, right? I don't want to be known as a liar. But if I lie sometimes, I'm doing something that a liar does. You understand what I'm saying? Like, it might not be it might not be my entire description, but I've fallen into one of the traps of lying, right? If I don't like backbiting, right? I'm not a backbiter. But one time, I kind of put my friend on blast in front of other people when that person wasn't around. Now, I'm not a backbiter by nature. Like, it's not my identity. But now I've fallen victim into doing something that involves backbiting. You understand what I'm saying here? So like you're almost involving yourself in something you don't want to be involved with, all right? And so the final part of this hadith is very beautiful, and I want to kind of, and this is where I want to get a little bit of a group discussion going. The final part of this hadith, the Prophet ﷺ, he mentions, he says, كَأَخْدِ الْكَفِّ, okay? كَأَخْدِ الْكَفِّ, which means it's like holding a person's hand or wrist, okay? So now that we've gone through all of this, the Prophet ﷺ is saying that a person who makes a promise, a mu'min, a believer who makes a promise, it's like holding the wrist of another person or holding the hand of another person. What does this last part mean to you guys now? Yes, Aliza, go for it.
It keeps you in check.
Oof. Good. Good. You keep going. You have something else?
No.
Oh, it keeps you in check. Yeah. It keeps you in check. You're like, good. It keeps you in check. Nothing else to say. Okay, good. Very good. Anyone else? When someone's holding someone else's wrist, what does that remind you of? Good. What'd you say? Like a child, almost? Okay, what'd you say?
Handcuffs.
Handcuffs, why?
It's kind of binding in a way.
Oof, man. Very good. One of the commentators of this hadith said exactly, what's your name again, bro?
Rayan.
Exactly what Rayan just said. It's that when you promise something to somebody, it's as though you've made like this physical bond. Y'all watch Harry Potter? The unbreakable vow, right? Like you've made this like physical bond with a person, right? You've almost like handcuffed yourself spiritually. You've tied yourself to this person, and you cannot unshackle yourself from this person until you fulfilled your oath. Until you fulfilled your oath now. You can't just be like, yeah, I'm done. Because you know why? And this is something really crazy. Yeah, I'll take this in right here. Even if you have broken away from that shackle, that handcuff is still weighing down the person that you left. Y'all feel me? That you've kind of like parted ways. You've said like, oh yeah, you know, I broke the promise and it's all you now, and I'm gonna leave you to it. That person's still weighed down by what you left them with. And that's something that a believer is just not okay doing for someone. You understand what I'm saying? And so one of the, you know, one of the kind of pieces of tangible advice that I'll share with you guys, and we'll open this up for Q&A, and this is where I want Ustada Fatima to also answer questions, and I'll take it back to you. She's looking at me like like I'm the most detestable person ever, but it's okay, inshallah, she'll get over it. But one of the most tangible pieces of advice I can give you guys right here, and this is something that I actually struggle with this a lot in my life growing up, and I still kind of like, this is like a character trait that I have trouble with still to this day. Overcommitting and under-delivering. That's like a really big thing, right? How many of y'all have had like moments in life where like friends ask you like if you can do X, Y, and Z, and you're like, yeah, I'm definitely down to do it. And then the time comes and you're like, you know, life, right? Like it's crazy. And it may have started as like a once in a while type of thing where like, oh, you know, like this person doesn't really ever do that to me, or like they usually follow through. But once we start kind of like going through this kind of vicious cycle of overcommitting and under delivering, it becomes very habitual for us. Like the Prophet ﷺ, he said that one just leads to another. That when you start promising things that you cannot fulfill, you're going to be okay lying more. Right? This is where the hadith comes into fruition. وَإِذَا حَدَّثَ كَذَبَ. That like, if you make a promise with somebody and there comes a moment where it's time for you to fulfill that promise and it's not convenient for you anymore to fulfill that promise, will you go lengths and bounds to actually break that promise once in a while? You will. And will you possibly lie once in a while? You will. When that person accuses you of like not following through, will you sometimes lose your temper and say things that you shouldn't say? You will. You see where the hadith comes into play here? It's very, very incredible how the Prophet used to think, y'all. It's incredible. And so one of the things I would say to you guys is, and I know this is, and this comes from like a brotherly, you know, point of view, that like it hurts sometimes to tell people no. How many of y'all have a hard time telling people no sometimes? You're like, someone asks you, they're like, hey, can you please do this? You know, I would really appreciate it. We love you so much. We would love you to be there. And you're like, oh, you love me? I guess, right? Like, yeah. It's like those emotions start kind of like playing, because when someone tells you they really want you there, or like they would really benefit from you being somewhere, you're like, oh man, this person really likes me a lot and they really benefit from, and I really want to be there for them. But at that moment, you got to be honest with yourself, because telling that person no, the pain that you're going through telling that person no is still less painful than you promising and not showing up the day of. Y'all feel me? Like I know it hurts. Like when a friend asks you, like, hey, can I count on you? You're like, yes, but no, right? Like, not that night, right? And I know it sucks. It really does, because you want to be there for them every night, right? You want to be there for them as much as you possibly can. And it hurts you to not be there for them sometimes. But the pain of like receiving a text at like 6:30 p.m. when you're supposed to be somewhere at 7, after you said all week that you'd be there, that's the worst pain ever. Because now they're left with the shackle, this handcuff. They're like, well, now it's me on my own now, I guess. Now I got to scramble. You see what I'm saying here? So as a Muslim, it's really, really, really incumbent upon all of us to make sure that, number one, we A, understand how serious oaths and promises are, and B, understand the opposite of a person who keeps their promises and oaths, that we are actually like venturing down this very dangerous route of hypocrisy. And number three, knowing that sometimes being very honest and upfront is actually the way that you can honor your oaths and promises, right? Just telling people what you can and cannot do. I just can't do that. It's not in my capacity to do what you want me to do. I just can't. I'm sorry. I would rather be honest with you than lie to you and not come through for you. You understand what I'm saying here? So that's the ending piece of advice that I would share with you guys, inshallah. Okay? So anybody have any questions, anything? Questions, any sort of comments, any sort of reflections that you have that you'd like to share with all of us that we can learn from you? Anyone?
Not really a question. Sure, go ahead. Like a comment. Or, like, go ahead. The older you get, I mean, the hadith is beautiful, but like, you're just like, I'll let you know. It's never like, yeah. I'll show up and then not show up. Well, for me personally, it's just like, oh, I'm going to let you know if I can.
So it's really interesting that you bring that up, Million. So
because I don't know, you know.
Yeah, no, I got you. I feel you. Huh?
You saw the meme?
The meme.
There's this meme that says, if I say I'll let you know, just go ahead.
So this is really interesting that you guys bring this up. I was actually like, this is somebody that obviously I kind of, you know, learn from and you know, I keep in my company. I also have this trait of saying, I'll let you know. And this person also kind of told me something that I don't think about. You know, like sometimes I'm like, oh yeah, I'll let you know is a great, great response, right? Because I'm like, it's like, inshallah.
Yeah.
Like God controls all, right? What are you doing challenging God's will? Like, I can't say yes or no, only Allah knows. But there's also this kind of like, I'll let you know harm that comes along with that phrase as well. And I'll tell you guys why. And I do this a lot too. And I'm putting the finger at myself before anybody else. When I say I let you know, I realize it almost like leads people to hope. Like even if you in your mind, you know what I'll let you know means. Because I'll let you know means something to you very clearly. You're like, yo, I'm not coming. You're like, I'll let you know what time I'll be going to bed that night. You know, I didn't complete my phrase. But to them, I'll let you know means, oh, they'll shoot me a text at like, you know, Friday morning telling me if they can come or not. I'm going to plan as though they might be able to come. So the advice that I received that I'll share with you guys is that the best response is to say, again, Islam is all about suppressing the nafs, It's so incredible, right? The so many companions of the Prophet they used to say that I've never fought anything more severe in my life than my own soul, than my own ego, because my ego just loves to be satiated. It loves to be loved. It loves to be revered. It loves to be wanted and liked by other people. So whenever there comes a moment where like my soul gets threatened by like the disapproval by others, it starts feeling very uncomfortable. And this is why we're like, yeah, for sure. Like I'll try to be there, you know? I'll maybe put me down for a maybe. But you have to ask yourself, Islam is not always about how you feel. Islam is about how you make other people feel as well. And I know that kind of goes against some of like the self-care and self-help stuff like that people kind of like throw out nowadays. We're like, oh, don't worry about other people. Worry about yourself, girl. Like, no. It's not, by the way, it's not always about that. Low key, it really isn't always about that, because sometimes Islam will be like, no. It's you should think about how other people think sometimes as well, because also other people's rights are important too, right? Like, actually have a college halakha, or a college bonfire halakha on December 11th. So it's a Saturday, not this Saturday. Next Saturday, we have a college bonfire, inshallah. So December 11th, I believe 6 p.m. Kind of don't.
Is it going to be here?
It'll be here, yeah, inshallah. Yeah. It's, dude, the outside bonfire area is so cool. It is so cool. Like,
is
that
road.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, yeah.